A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Wild Tales podcast. I'm Jason Fox, and this series is all about adventure, resilience, and inspirational humans. The podcast is presented by The Book of Man and in partnership with Talisker, the single malt whiskey made by the sea. I have a very special episode of the podcast where my guests are two rowers taking on the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge, which starts on the 12th of December this year. Dixon McDonald and Jimmy Carroll are part of a team called Latitude 35, who are competing in the race from the Canary Islands to Antigua, and we chat about how their preparations are going and how much of a challenge this is. As an added bonus, I was also joined by Aldo Kane, who I rode the Atlantic with in 2016, so we could all share some experiences and advice on achieving at sea. As usual, you've been asking me questions on Instagram for this episode. Because it's Christmas, I'll be sending out a Talisker Sea Salted Caramel gift pack to the persons whose question I picked out. Anyway, here we go, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Right, hi everyone. It's a bit of a different one today. First of all, we've got Aldo Kane back, unfortunately. He's, I suppose, assisting me in this podcast because it's been deemed that I need assistance because it's early in the morning. But today we've got a couple of incredible guys, Dixon and Jimmy, who are about to set off on their Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge. They're going to be rowing across the Atlantic from La Gomera in the Canaries, which is where you are now. Am I correct?
Correct.
Right. And they are rowing to Antigua, which is a small island in the Caribbean.
Good to meet you,
lads,
guys.
Welcome.
Good to meet
you. Thanks for coming on. I know it's early, but I know you've also got a lot of stuff to do anyway.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great to be on.
Aldo, thanks for coming along at this early hour. It's all because of Aldo that we're here this early. Thanks, big time. Right, we've got this. This conversation could go in one of a million different directions, but we do have structure to it, believe it or not. It might not seem like that at the end, but we have got structure. And the first thing I'm going to set off with is, how do you two know each other?
Yeah, so we know each other through a mutual friend of ours who's one of our teammates, a guy named Todd Hooper. And Jimmy and Todd are good buddies, and Jimmy can speak to that a little bit more. But I had started putting a team together about 2 years ago as team captain of Latitude 35. And we were looking for another teammate, and very luckily got this guy, and Jimmy can give you a little bit more detail about how that happened.
Yeah, so I was in a barbecue actually back in June of this year.
You were in it?
Yeah, I was in a barbecue. We're having a few beers, and Todd looked up and said, "We're looking for a fourth teammate. Situation's changed." And before I could say anything, my wife had volunteered and said, "Yeah, here go." And I was like, "Okay, right, cheers, thanks, I'm off."
Yeah, there's so, a hidden message there somewhere.
Who knows what she's up to now whilst I'm out here. I'll leave that to your imaginations. Oh, and so the rest is history. But luckily, because of COVID, the guys hadn't been able to do any training together. And so we went down to Burnham-on-Crouch, and we got in this beautiful boat called a Leader, who had done some crazy crossing, and we did all our training in her.
Is it still in good nick?
Mate, I had no idea you were in our old boat. So for those listening, Elida is the boat that me, Aldo, Matt Bennett, Ollie Bailey, and Ross Johnson, the sociopath, rode across the Atlantic in. I didn't know that.
Not after we left it. So, there's a lot of stalactites and what have you in the cabins, which was pretty golfing. But
a little bit of a facelift.
That would be Aldo.
It's definitely seen a lot of cabin love.
So basically you got to know each other through being volunteered.
And there's one other guy, obviously John O. Morrison, who makes up the fourth man in the team. John O. and I were both in the army together, but we didn't actually know each other. We were in separate regiments, both in reconnaissance regiments.
Yeah.
And so we got two civilians and then two stinking chat army boys.
It sounds, to be fair, It does sound a bit like ours, Aldo, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, the idea kind of came about in a pub, I reckon, and then our first team building event was 3-day long haul session at Glastonbury. I don't think we were the same. We hadn't sort of had any experience either, or did much training for it. But yeah, it sounds very similar.
That's why, to be fair, that's why we asked if what state the boat Elida was in, because the first time we got into it and tried to row out of said Burnham on Crouch, I think we spanked into every yacht that was moored up in the marina. It was embarrassing. Someone was like, oh, there's a bloke on that boat that was in the special boat service. And I was like, trying to hide. Anyway, so that's how you know each other. In fact, what do you two do at the moment as a job?
So I work at a healthcare technology startup. So it's a cloud medical imaging company. And before that, I spent 8 years working in the financial services industry. So I don't exactly have the most traditional background as you think about people that are rowing across an ocean, especially considering that I grew up in a 17-floor apartment building in Manhattan. I think similar to you guys and Aldo, having read a little bit about your background, I'm very much drawn to the outdoors and had gotten into the triathlon world a little bit later in life as a competitive age grouper, and heard about this race from a client and was completely hooked. I was blown away by the fact that there are actually people that are crazy enough to row across the Atlantic Ocean, and watch the videos of people starting off in La Gomera and then finishing in Antigua, and just was thinking to myself, this is something I have to do.
Jimmy, what are you up to at the moment then? Well, not what you're up to at the moment. What's your job?
So I set up a company called Polaris 3 years ago. Actually, folks, that's where we first kind of met at Remont and what have you.
Yeah, that's right.
And I set it up with another ex-army mate, and it's a luxury experiential adventure travel company. So we operate both on land and at sea, and take clients all over the world to places like Antarctica, Papua New Guinea, Socotra, Eritrea, and also more friendly places, you know, all over the States, anywhere really.
Brilliant. The irony is you're taking yourself on one of the most sort of luxurious on the planet.
Yeah.
You basically take people away on those and you stitch yourself up.
Pretty much. The idea of, you know, stepping onto a 100-meter super yacht after this will be even better. But yeah.
How much do you know about the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge? And why, I mean, Dix, you've obviously just sort of semi-mentioned it, but why did you choose that? What made you get involved with that one?
Yeah, sure. So the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge, for those who don't know, is a 3,000-mile ocean rowing race unsupported from La Gomera in the Canary Islands to Antigua in the Caribbean, as Foxy mentioned. And it's we'll be rowing in shifts of 2 hours on, 2 hours off, 24 hours a day for the entirety of the crossing. And we may have to mix up the shift patterns a little bit depending on how tight the race is. But the reason we picked it, I think first and foremost, is it's an extremely reputable race in the ocean rowing community, and it's labeled as the world's toughest row. And Atlantic Campaigns, or the organizers of the race, have a sterling record. And so naturally, as we think about different adventures to go and pursue, to be part of a race where there is a flawless safety record, obviously is extremely appealing. So, and there are 21 other teams, 55 rowers from 9 countries this year. And we just thought if we were going to go try to make a splash and win this thing, this was the best way to go and do it.
What's the fastest time right now? Like, what's the record for that crossing?
For the 4-man team, that's 29 days and 14 hours. And that was set back in 2018, so which is rapid. They had very favorable conditions.
What's the longest sort of training row that you've done? Because you said with COVID you've not been out, but yeah, what's interesting to know how much training you've actually done.
So we've logged, I think, well north of 130 hours in the boat in total. The longest and probably most miserable session we did was the first weekend in October. We were out in the North Sea in freezing cold conditions. It was pissing down rain the entire time. And we had a nice about 30 knot headwind that we were rowing into, combined with a pretty strong currents as well. Yeah. So we ended up having to row in shifts of 3 guys on the oars, 1 guy resting, 2 hours on, 40 minutes off for about 12 hours, three of which we were rowing pretty much in the same spot.
Half the knots, I'd say. But yeah, someone actually commented, one of the questions was, it looked like we're wearing a lot more heavy duty kits than you guys were. That was because that was that weekend. It was just, it was raining cats and dogs. It was gopping.
You did that, folks. That's when I almost got kicked off the team, because my work schedule at that time was so hectic, and I was like back to back expeditions. And then we had this 4 day North Sea thing, or be in Venezuela doing a world first with Backshaw, and I was like, I need to go where the work is. And then afterwards, Foxy and Ross were telling me that it was absolutely honking, wasn't it? Didn't you get beaten by quite a lot of old pensioners?
Right, I'll tell you what happened. So basically, Aldo didn't want to come out. We rode across the North Sea. It was an idea that Charlie Pritchard came up with. Awesome bloke. Aldo couldn't come, didn't want to come, threw his teddies out the pram, and that left, because we were a team of five, not four. And we went and did this North Sea race. And it wasn't as bad as yours, lads, to be fair, as far as I'm aware. It was actually quite apart from Nelly getting ploughed into by a massive container ship, the weather wasn't too bad, but we did get beaten by a bunch of middle-aged women, which they took great pleasure in writing about in their book. So yeah, we did do the North Sea race, but ultimately we didn't get an awful lot of training hours in, did we? I think one of the biggest training session we'd put to one side was supposed to be a weekend away in the boat as a five. We rowed out of the Crouch, the River Crouch, and to the fairway marker boy, and then we were like, let's tie up on that, and we basically sort of like got a bit rowed back in, back into the marina, yeah. So that was, yeah, the training. We sort of, I'd say when we got to Portugal in Lagos, that's when we sort of, I suppose we went into a blind panic, because we were like, oh, hang on a minute, we're like a week or so away from this, and we don't actually know what we're doing.
Oh, so were you, at that point, were you worried? Because I look back on it, and you and I were mega busy afterwards, but at that time, were you worried about it, or was it the same as any other job?
I was, no. So we will come back to you guys, because it's all about you, but Aldo's just asking me the question. I had an excited anxiousness about me when we were in Portugal, as in, like, it's a daunting prospect, but I'd already got over the how I needed to deal with it. So I'd thought about the bigness of it earlier on, and that I could picture myself at the end, but then I was just concentrating on every day. I refused to give the entirety of the expedition the thought, because it would have freaked me out. So I was just concentrating on the day-to-day bits and pieces we needed to do on the build-up. The bit when I did get freaked out, though, was actually a few months earlier, when I was on holiday in Ibiza, and I was sat on a beach and I was looking out to sea, and it would just disappear, you know, where it just disappears into nothing. It hits the horizon. And I was like, we're going to be rowing out into that, never to see land again, maybe. And that was the daunting. But I'm glad I went through that. And I'm sure, have you had the same sort of experiences within your heads?
Yeah, I think pretty much so. I think certainly getting out into the North Sea, we know the Roach rather well as well. But getting out there's a couple of experiences. And I think that last weekend, you're like, what have we signed up for? And then thinking, yeah, actually, the North Sea is nothing compared to the Atlantic with potential 30, 40 foot rollers. How are we actually going to train for this? That's the kind of thing that you keeps you up at night. You're like, this is real. Yeah.
I actually had a similar experience to you, Foxy. I was standing on the beach with my dad about a year and a half ago, and he just was looking out at the horizon similarly. And he said, Dix, just please come back. Otherwise, your mom is going to kill me. So I remember looking at
it. Wasn't that you were going to be gone? It was just the fact that he was going to be deep in shit with the missus.
No, that's exactly it. It was more concerned about my mom than me, I think. No, but joking aside, I completely agree. I think there's a nervous excitement right now, and at this point, we've been thinking about it and training for it so long that we just want to get this thing underway.
We last night we had dinner with the oldest competitor ever to take place in the race, Frank, who's 71. And it's like, the guy's absolutely nails. He's fully out there. He went on Bear Grylls' Survivor Island, did that. And then he's like, I need another challenge, 71, let's go and row the Atlantic solo.
So is he on this Atlantic race?
Yeah. So okay. The BBC are all over him, Channel 4 are making a documentary, which is good. You know, it gets the race lots of coverage. So he's funny.
That's awesome. That's okay. That's right. You get all sorts up there, I suppose. Is there a bit of an atmosphere out there in La Gomera at the moment?
There is, but to be honest, it's pretty subdued. You have to walk everywhere. You have to walk with a mask. Outside, you have to wear a mask on the boat park. The bars are open, but they're only open till 1, and it's only seated service only. So it's
only open till 1 in the morning. Yeah. Mate, that's all right.
Exactly. That's why you need them for longer.
You're athletes now.
This COVID has, you know, it's sort of ruined a few things, because if it wasn't for COVID, me and Aldo would have probably actually been out there to do this interview.
Yeah.
As it is, we're not, so we better not think about it too much. But yeah, so obviously you've dealt with the sort of pre-row blues, I'd say. You're now in that. Am I right in saying you're probably at that point now where you just want to get on with it? You're sick to death of the sort of the build up now, especially being in the Canaries.
Yeah, well, as Jimmy said, since bars close at 1 a.m., you know, there's only so much you can really do here right now. But yeah, no, we're after thinking about this for so long, we just want to get it started. And we've been working on the boat, and we actually have our safety inspection today at 1 p.m., which is where we'll get final sign off. And then our boat should be put in the water on Saturday. And then we'll have a week until the race starts on the 12th. So, we just want to crack on with it.
You know, I think Foxy, that we didn't have was obviously we sort of pushed out and went from Portugal on a Todd's, but and a lot of people look at it and go, well, there's however many boats, you know, you'll have that feeling of camaraderie. But once you get out there in the hydrodynamics of boats, once you're out there, you don't really see another boat again, do you, until you're on the other side? Is that right?
Pretty much. And because Angus is doing our weather routing, he could send us a completely different route to everyone else as well. So from the beginning, we could be going north and they're all going south. Let's hope he doesn't fuck that one up. But
we had Foxy's old man doing a weather routing, because he's obviously a seaman, and every time we go into a spot of bad weather, Foxy would be on the phone. He'd be like, "That dad, you never told us about this. Do you remember that?" And so like 2 days at Parang and screaming at your old man.
It didn't sound like a toothless job, though, to be fair.
You guys were sponsored by Inmarsat, weren't you? Because we just got them on board as well.
Yeah.
Inmarsat are good. They're good for these crazy expeditions, and they've always supported us really well, actually.
Inmarsat, supported us super well and have supported me on other expeditions with their... We had like a BGAN on board, and so we had some access to internet and things. So yeah, super good.
I gotta say, so obviously when we did ours, and Inmarsat was very, very, very kind. They said, look, there's the BGAN, there's a couple of satellite phones, we've topped them up, blah blah blah, you know, make sure that you, with those satellite phones, you pretty much got free reign, you know, it's there for your welfare, we're worried about your morale and that, so make sure you use those anyway. They didn't get used as much as they probably thought they would. The BGAN got absolutely rinsed because everyone just wanted to bang shit up on Instagram and Twitter for the old self-validation. And we came back, and my mate Del, who's at Inmarsat, was like, lads, Inmarsat would really like you to come in and give a talk to a small audience, but they will broadcast it out to the masses in the Inmarsat community around the world. And we were like, okay, cool. We went in, we got into, it's on Old Street, actually, Old Street Roundabout. And we went, as you know, went in there, had a little chat, sat down in the canteen. And then Del was like, he goes, lads, the execs want to see you as well, because you racked up a bit of a bill. And basically, Del kept sending us messages while we were out there, and he was like, lads, try and curb. He's trying to say it nicely and being diplomatic, because obviously we're in the middle of the ocean. He's like, just try and curb the data usage on the BGAN. Anyway, we racked up a bill of approximately £75,000 Now, I don't really know what that means, because ultimately it's just you're paying for airspace, aren't you? Is that not right? Yeah. So anyway, we sort of justified it.
Well, that's a challenge.
But ultimately, Inmarsat became our biggest sponsors and they never gave us a penny.
We've got a Fleet One dome on our boat, on the stern cabin, right, which obviously got the BGAN in it, but on a gyroscope, so it's constantly moving.
Oh, mate, that's easy.
We had to sit and like point it towards.
Honestly, it was one of the hardest things going, and it was always in the worst position, and you were like trying to balance it on one thing with your phone. You like, so a wave would come in, and then you'd be effing and blinding. It was a nightmare.
Yeah.
So how much training do you reckon you've racked up?
So we did the hours on the boat, on your boat, and that was enough, to be honest. We had to get off that thing. And and then it's been gym time, but a lot of that, because of lockdown, there's no gyms open for the majority of that time. So it's all, you know, it's what you could steal and get into the house and in the garden. And so I think we all luckily managed to get hold of an ergo. Got a load of free weights and, you know, and other bits. So we could got a program, and Gus Barton was our, you know, strength and conditioning coach.
I bumped into him the other day in Battersea Park, weirdly.
And then a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of sessions done over Zoom and things like that. But then when the gyms opened up again, we could get back in, do a quick smash on one of Gus's programs. And then they shut down again for the last month. So that was another hurdle to get over as well. So it's been a different year from what I think teams would normally prepare.
Yeah, to Gus's credit too, he's also had to train, you know, three of us being based in London, one of us, myself, being based in New York City. He's had to train us across different continents, and obviously with a lockdown. And so he's been great at adapting our programs. And I would say, despite the lockdown, we've probably trained somewhere between, I would say, an hour to an hour and a half during the weekdays, and then I would say kind of 2 to 3 hours on the weekends, because we typically would get in a longer erg session. So it's been a nice mix of erg and then more strength and mobility type stuff.
That's good. That's really good. And to be fair, like for you guys, it's testament to you that you've been able to persevere through this year, because this year's been mirroring it really. And but also it's like, I'd take my hats off to Talisker and the Atlantic Challenge guys, because they've persevered through this. Like Talisker obviously sponsoring it, and they have done for a long time, and they could pull the plug because it's their reputation at risk. Yeah. And they've not. And the Atlantic, and obviously they've got faith in that team, because they've gone out there and put it together and made it work. So it's a good effort all round, really. Do you not agree, Aldo?
So to get it out the door when there's so many restrictions on travel. Once you get going, though, you're going to be in the safest spot.
Taking social distancing and creating your own bubble to another level.
Yeah, exactly. Have you guys had a night out in the boat yet? You've done that on the North Sea, and gone through the routine.
Yeah, we've got to know each other pretty well. Yeah, definitely. But we're on the same size boat as for four of us, which for five of you guys were on. So
I was the smallest bloke on that boat probably. So I was.
Foxy sent me a message saying you were the coxswain.
Yeah.
No, I didn't say he was a coxswain.
I was the smallest for five blokes on there. Was pretty tight. We had a couple of days of under para ankle, not going anywhere, just being smashed around by the waves. And it's fine when you're all out on deck rowing, as you know, but it's like when you go into lockdown, then it's like, that the far end cabin had three of them in it. I have no idea how they fitted in.
Who was up in the bow and who's in the stern for you guys?
Me and Aldo were in the stern with the equipment, with all the comms equipment, because no one else wanted to sleep next to that when the alarms were going off. The bigger cabin at the front was for the three of them. Now Ross is about the same size as Aldo,
5'9".
There's always beef between them about size, but anyway. But the other two, Matt Bennett and Ollie Bailey, who are both from the financial sector, they are units. Like I'm not small, but they dwarf me. Bailey's like 6'4", 6'5", Matt's 6'3", 6'4", and they're lumps as well. So to be fair, that cabin at the far, you know, up forward, as they say in the nautical world, is big enough, but it wasn't with those three in it, and it was honking. Like we kept ours clean, and that's a bit of advice I'd give to you: keep the cabins clean, because that's your haven. It's like morale happens in there. But theirs was stinking. That every now and again we'd go in there and you'd find bits of skin from 4 weeks before, and skin off the feet and whatnot. It was honking. Each to their own. Whereabouts are you two in a cabin together? Have you worked that one out, or are you just hot cabin?
We worked it out pretty quickly on the first row, actually. Dixon, being the captain, said, "I'm going up front, and I need the presidential palace." Muggins here was the only one who had like his day skippers and any nautical kind of knowledge. So it's like I shoved in the stern straight away. And Todd was like, "Well, I roped you into this, so I'll come in the back." But Todd's like 6'4" as well, so I'm crammed in. So there's two of us in there, but actually it works well. And yeah, we have all the comms, obviously, which you guys are aware of, the VHF and the Garmin and the plotter, the auto helm, which is just bloody noisy.
Right. I'll stop you there. How many spare auto helms have you got?
So we've got three auto helms with us.
Good effort. Well done. Because trust me, that's your only route to morale is that auto helm. Because if that goes tits up, you're going to be in a world of hurt mentally.
Yeah, the hand steering is just not an option.
And it's you've probably been told it, but it's worth changing it out every week. Even if it's not struggling, just change it out and keep giving it a rest.
And then in the bow cabin, we have the espresso maker and the juicer. So
have you actually?
No, he hasn't bought his man to do that.
Yeah.
Aldo, do you want to tell the lads about our what is now an infamous story about our tea and coffee? You might have even...
Yeah, so obviously coming from Royal Marines heritage, like getting a wet on is like pretty important. And
hold up, what was that? Boring, no flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh, jazz up dinner with pecan crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So there's five of us there and like I drink coffee, Foxy does, Matt does, Bailey does, but Ross doesn't drink hot drink. So he's still like sort of small child in that respect, juice.
But we did give him one of his jobs before going. Like we all get given jobs, like you all get given tasks to make sure you get the stuff ready for the boat, whatever that is. His was what we call in the Marines, the wet boat. He was in charge of all the makings, tea, coffee, hot chocolate, milk, sugar, all that.
Sugar, milk, yeah. And then, so we're all like, as the lead up that you guys have been doing, cutting all the like edges off of things, trying to reduce weight. And we've got all this big bundle of like coffee and tea and all the rest of it. And we all have a pretty rough night the night before we go out. Everyone's doing their own thing. And we get in the boats, we set off. We're still quite nervous, head out into a fairly decent big sea. And we're all sort of like wide-eyed. First time I'd been at sea at night in the boat as well. I hadn't spent any time in it really. So it was my first night. So we're like, as we see Portugal disappearing off into the sort of behind the horizon, it's like, right, it's getting dark. Let's get the tea and coffee on. Ross, what cabin are they in? And we're like, I'm sort of rooting around. Foxy's like rooting around looking for where the tea and coffee is. And he's like, he's like, I meant to tell you, I think I've left it. So we're on the first night heading out into what could possibly be 2 months worth of chopping around in the Atlantic, and we don't have any tea, coffee, hot chocolate. Literally all we had was hot water and jelly babies. That was about it, wasn't it?
It was horrendous. Honestly, I thought he was going to get launched at first when the initial sort of shock set in that we weren't going to be drinking anything other than hot water. Yeah, I mean, mine and Aldo's saving grace is we took Barocca.
Yeah.
So, like, the highlight of the day was just this, in the morning, a flavoured orange pint of water. That was as good as it gets. But, Ross is still alive, don't worry. He doesn't care that he let us down either. He never does. what do you see as your main challenges on this one?
I think... There's a couple of different dynamics that lots of people concentrate on. One, which we've covered off already, the physical training side of things. And, are you strong enough? How's the body going to hold up? But a really big dynamic, I'd say, is 50% of it is mental resilience. And I think it's something that we've worked on a lot, and we've spoken to each other about what are our pinch points, where are our emotions, what's been going on at home. And it's, certainly something for me coming from the military and like you guys, that it's something which has been discussed a lot more, especially amongst blokes now. And a lot of people have asked us about that, and they're like, so you really talked about when do you last cry, what's going on? It's like, yeah, because actually we want to get all of those ghosts out of, out of the closet now, and really tackle that. And I think it's so important, and that's actually a lesson for life for a lot of people to go forward with and really understand, and don't feel afraid. And I remember when I came back from Afghanistan the first time, and my brother-in-law said, what's going on? Are you speaking to people? And I was like, yeah, kind of. He's like, Jim, you've had two shoulder surgeries, you've had a leg operation. Every time you've gone away, got fixed by a surgeon, had a physio, massaged it all back, manipulated it. You should go and get someone just to massage the brain, and just work it out and just talk to people. It's such a good way of putting it for me, and it's something that we've transferred all the way through, because you're going to be in the middle of the Ogun, the ocean for 1500 miles from the coast at any point, and there's no one else there apart from the four of you, and there's going to be pinch points. The weather's going to play an effect on it, you're going to be knackered, whatever, and something could erupt, even the smallest thing, and just being able to talk about that and try and war game it beforehand and look at the different scenarios, it's just vital. So for me, I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges.
Man, that's awesome to hear you say that you've approached it in that way. I mean, obviously me and Aldo talk about this sort of stuff all the time, and we preach to people about it all the time, and it's good to hear you saying it as well. But ultimately, I don't think all of us did that on that boat, did we? I mean, we got on very well. We had a few mishaps, a few little hiccups, but ultimately it would have been even better, I think, if we'd have probably had that discussion. But maybe 4 years ago wasn't that time. Who knows?
Well, I think there's, like saying what you said there is quite important, is a mutual respect, which sounds like, it sounds weird saying it, because you think, well, of course we do. We're mates and we're about to do this thing, but there's a couple of times on the boat, for example, where, like, after we got capsized and Foxy and I are, freezing at the back of the boat trying to work out, like, knots and how to put, like, Foxy wasn't cold. But, like, trying to get these, we were going through the like, classic symptoms of, like, hypothermia, irritability, like, just being irrational, But that mutual respect of knowing that, like, right, well, we're both arguing about this, so one of us needs to, like, step up and do this bit, and then the other one can do that bit. And I think, ultimately we didn't have that many blowouts about things because there was that sort of mutual respect in a way where you think, and it's words that I always remember from Foxy, is that, like, about big timing, is that, you never know when you're going to be the one needing help. So just, like, be humble and wind your neck in. And that's so true. Like, on that row, 20% of it is fitness and you know, and staying the course. The rest of it is mental and admin, basically. So it's I had a classic example in that where I had nothing wrong with me for like 6.5 weeks, and I was like doing like first aid and lancing boils and all the rest of it. There's nothing wrong with me. And I started to get a bit on my high horse, and then I was swiped down with galloping crotch rot and mold all up inside my arms, and it was just like a good reminder that, you know, like everyone's just one step away from being smashed.
I wasn't laughing at all. I tell you what though, I always like to like bring something from these podcasts to people that they can take away with. But if you think about the respect that people should have for each other on a boat with regard to their mental well-being, and also, you know, how they're getting on day to day physically, we should do that in society. Society should just be one big boat where we think about other people every now and again, because it makes for a much happier place to be than hanging around. But anyway, there we go. There's my thought for the day.
And Foxy, too, the other thing, too, that I just quickly add to it is, you know, at the end of the day, the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge is a race, too. So we are competing against 20 other teams. And our teammate, Todd Hooper, says this, and I think we completely agree with him. The other mental challenge that we'll have is if we do have any issues, whether physical or mechanical, and seasickness plays a big role in this as well. And there have been situations in past races where rowers will get violently seasick to the point where they need to be medevaced off a boat. And so for us, I think one of the big things that we've also talked through too is how do we deal with a situation where one of us does get seasick, or a couple of us get seasick, or we do have mechanical issues and we fall behind in the race. Because ultimately it is about the journey and the adventure. And we just need to remind ourselves that we're doing this because we want to do it. And while the goal is to win a race, we just need to make sure that we can kind of battle through anything that happens in the event that we do start to fall behind a little bit, which I think is key as well.
Yeah, definitely a good thought. But that actually leads nicely into, who would you deem as your main competition on this race?
We probably
That means there is something. There's a group that you've taken a dislike to.
Isn't that natural?
there are a few teams. I mean, it's definitely a competitive field, and I think that motivates us more. There's a team called Row for Cancer that's a twosome, a guy named Mark Slatz and another guy named Kai, and I'm blanking on his last name. But Mark is a world record holder. He's done the race before.
As a solo, he smashed it in 30 days.
And his teammate is an incredibly fit guy as well, and they have a boat that is I think what 150
kilos unloaded.
So a very light boat, and both absolute specimens. So I think they're definitely a team to watch. And then there are a couple other foursomes. There's a team called On Shoulders of Giants, another team called Forfeiter Planet, Audacity, all foursomes that look very strong and fit. But at the end of the day, it's really anyone's race. I mean, who knows what can happen out there. But I think those are probably the teams that we're going to be probably tracking most closely.
Who were you thinking of then when I said it was your main competition? There's obviously someone you don't like. Mate, I know this shit goes down. Come on.
Yeah, we're just taking a look at all of the guys, how they're walking in the park, and you know, It's the strut, and yeah, some boys are gone for the long haul. It looks like they're going out to do a bit of caravanning, and you know, maybe they haven't taken as many rations because they've eaten them already, and you know, others.
how important is it? This is going to sound slightly funny, but how important is it actually to win or to take part?
I think. Yeah, I joined the team last, and it's been a very short baptism of fire, you know, having only joined at the end of June, beginning of July, which is pretty rapid turnaround for it. Yeah. But lots of reasons why I joined. I knew about the race before and had lots of people, you know, mate of mine had taken the amputee's boat over, you know, so fully read into it. But it was a desire for these guys to go out and win, which really, you know, struck a chord with me. And I think, you know, that's something that I've taken from the military days, you know, and the sense of wanting to succeed and never lose and never give up, And I think that was a mindset and something that I immediately related to. So absolutely taking part, you're going to be doing something very unique. You know, more people have been to top of Everest than have rode an ocean, etc. But the overwhelming desire to win is probably the strongest chord with all of us.
Yeah. As it should be, really. You know, taking part is obviously the most important, but when you're young and you want to get across that ocean, it is about winning as well. You know, that's the drive. It's good to have that drive, I reckon. Mate, I've got to say a few things, but I'm going to slowly wrap it up because I'm aware of time and that, even though you haven't been out any later than 1 o'clock. Firstly, on a slightly lighter note, but maybe darker, I'd just like to let you know that you talk about Elida and it's got, you know, it's, so is it looking a bit battered?
She's a little bit tired, but she's done 5 crossings now.
Not only that, I think I personally have covered that boat. there were a few sketchy days early on in the crossing, and I had a dicky stomach, and yeah, I had.
Were you seasick, Poppy?
I was never seasick, was I? I never get seasick, mate. I was in the special boat service. Now, do you remember? I got overcome with needing to go to the toilet on, like, rapidly, like me and him.
Proper.
We'd battened down the hatches. The waves were cracked. Like, it was too rough to row. We had the power anchor out, and it was just like, you know, and then I'm sat next to him, and I'm like, mate. And he's like, you're going to have to go out there. And literally, I was outside, massive waves crashing into me. Oh, mate, it went everywhere. Anyway.
You aren't alone. We won't say which of our teammates, but one of our teammates had a similar experience where he was on the bucket on deck, and a wave came over the deck, and let's just say he and the bucket both ended up kind of tipped over.
It was disturbing. I was rowing in the first position and he was a foot in front of me. He went over, bang, bucket on the side. He's hanging off the rails. I'm like,
quality. Okay, so we're going to last few questions, then I'm going to go to Instagram and then we're going to wrap it up and let you guys get back into getting your head in the game. Who are you raising money for and why, if there's a reason?
Yeah, so I'm raising money for Achilles International, which is a fantastic organization that enables folks with various disabilities to participate in endurance events with a primary focus on running and triathlons. And so I've had the privilege to guide some visually impaired athletes in the New York City Marathon and the Brooklyn Half Marathon, and then a variety of different practices that they have typically 2 times per week in New York. So it's been inspiring, to say the least, especially as someone who has such a love for the endurance community to participate in that and help visually impaired athletes go out and help guide them and achieve the goals that they set for themselves in the running and triathlon world. So a focus for me on them.
Yeah. For myself, I'm raising money for the Pleuris Foundation. We set up a charitable unit for Pleuris this year, because actually we didn't want to just play lip service to conservation and wildlife protection. And ultimately, you know, we're only custodians of this world for the next generations. And certainly in travel, we've got to protect places more. We've got to encourage the people we work with to do that. And so the Pleuris Foundation was set up just for that every single project we run, money goes into an initiative that it's either on that project or into other charities that support the ecosystem, the wildlife, wherever we're going around the world. So those are our two. And then Jono is supporting the Not Forgotten, which is the Armed Forces charity. And then Todd is supporting the Brian Cross Memorial Foundation, which is a brain tumor foundation.
Nice one. Thanks. Right, so for both of you, this, what, and you know, it's obvious because this is the Wild Tales podcast, but what does the outdoors mean to you and your well-being? Is it something that you need to factor in because it's important?
For me, my happiness, I would say, kind of revolves around my ability to be outdoors and doing things that are adventurous. So it might sound kind of counterintuitive, but as someone who grew up in New York City, I've actually been lucky enough to grow up surfing, skiing, participating in triathlons, just kind of being out in nature. And for me, it's everything. And it's where I'm happiest. It's where I feel like I can kind of escape from the noise of the world and just completely disconnect. And so that's one of the reasons why I'm drawn to this race, because I think the moments when we're together as a team, when it is calm and there are those dramatic sunrises and sunsets, and you see the whales and pods of dolphins and swimming by you, I think that'll be one of those moments where you're just completely kind of in awe of nature and just remember those for a lifetime.
Yeah, and I think likewise for me, really, guys, is that everything I've done, the previous career, what have you, it's all about being outdoors, and then setting up Polaris as well. It's just another stage in that. And I think, we spend so much time in front of a computer now, and I need that mental break and block and just getting out. And Jordan and I, my business partner, some of our best creativity and strategy sessions are going outside and actually going up into the hills and what have you. You know, he lives in Herefordshire, I'm down in Somerset, and we go and have walks and whatever to go away and think about things. And it's so important. I think people need to get outdoors more. Actually, during lockdown, maybe that was encouraged more by taking that hour exercise and people realizing that, getting some, the heart rate rise, doing something physical. And it's not even just physical, going for a walk really does help with the kind of the mental area as well.
I was just thinking that when you were saying that then, I was thinking every time, like I bang on about this all the time about being outside and just when you were saying that, I was like, I haven't been in the hills in ages. I want to do this, I want to do that. And like even now when I spend, a lot of my time outside, I still feel like it's not enough. I head off to Saudi, so I'm away for 2 weeks exploring sort of lava tubes and things there, but climbing. But so I head off tonight though for like 3 days of just paddling down the River Avon, which is like close to where I am. But it's just getting outside and doing stuff. I just feel like the more I do, the better I am as a person. When I'm not doing it, I'm a shit of a bloke to be around. But along with like physical exercise as well, it's just like two things that I kind of feel like I need to be doing a lot more of.
Yeah, I completely agree. My wife always says if you're getting stressed, she's like, go out, go for a run, go and take some time outside. And yeah, it's so true. You just got to break free.
I think to Jimmy's point too, what's important is, there's such a range. You can get out and go for a walk for an hour and feel refreshed, and then there's obviously something like rowing across the Atlantic. And I think just any ability to just get outside and get some fresh air, and it doesn't have to be something as dramatic as this, I think is really important to stress.
From having done it, when you're out there, don't forget to take 5 minutes, half an hour out and just be in awe of being on a tiny boat in the middle of one of the biggest oceans on earth, miles, hundreds, thousands of miles away from help. Really, it's such a special, unique place to be. You could be sort of put off by it and too busy with like all the gubbins that goes with rowing across the Atlantic, but take time out to enjoy it, because even at the longest crossing, it will be done and gone and you'll be back on with the rest of your life in no time. We found that, and it's like we got lots of learning from it, but it definitely, we could have done with spending more time being present there.
Your crossing was 50 days, wasn't it?
Yeah.
50 days, 10 hours, 36 minutes. Yeah. But I'd say, mate, take those times to enjoy it, because you have I feel like I've got an affinity to like the Atlantic Ocean. I'm proud that I did it. And I'm like, whenever someone talks about the Atlantic, I'm like, yeah.
But yeah, Foxy, do you know that the other thing that I get is like when I'm standing on a beach somewhere looking out, I've flown to Venezuela two or three times since we did that row, and it's the exact same route that you sort of fly down, and like you do it in 10 hours and you just look out the window, or you're on the beach and you're looking out and you think, like I've rowed, like our team rowed with no engines for 50 days and we crossed the planet. It's mega special, really special.
Yeah, definitely. Right, I have got I've picked it. There's two I want to get answered. One of them sort of for Aldo, really. The one that I've got to ask you two guys, Dix and Jimmy, is from a person called Charlie_B_33, and she starts off saying, Aldo had to dress the wounds on Foxy's ass. Thanks for the reminder. Of your teammates, who would you ask to do yours? So before you answer, what I'm actually going to turn that question into is who is the med specialist? Who's the medic on board? Who's picked up that job?
I think Jono, who's the teammate who I'm sharing the bow suite with, is the medical specialist. So he's put the whole kit together, and I've had to sleep tip to tip with him. So I think my
Okay, you need to reword that now. I'll give you that opportunity just to reword that, the answer. Very
Americanism.
So I think my answer would probably be Jono, given how close we've gotten.
Okay, so just for the Brits out there that don't understand Americanism, that's top to tail, basically. Head to toe,
yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Oh dear.
Okay, cool. So you've got your designated medic. Aldo was actually ours, did an amazing job. Don't normally say that, but yeah, he did. I'm going to go back to one that's fun. It's from John Merriweather, John_Merriweather. I'm afraid, mate, that you don't win anything. Aldo, what's the most peculiar thing you've seen in the ocean?
Oh, the most peculiar. Okay, so this is a good one. So I'll keep it short. We, after a very short space of time, like 2 or 3 weeks, once we started getting into the groove of it, we needed to clean the bottom of the boat, which you guys will need to do as well. And we'd been sort of followed by this sort of oceanic white tip shark shadow in the swell that we could see, and that disappeared, and it was like, right, Foxy, get in the water. And so we go through this whole rigmarole of strapping a knife onto the end of an oar, like as a spike potentially, and we get Foxy in the water. And we'd been like, for weeks, we'd been like, these like sailfish are amazing. They're like beautiful colors, iridescent, and they're like crisp packets sort of blowing past us. None of us realized they were Portuguese men of war, which was just amazing to see. These they're not really jellyfish, but like I'd never seen one before, and yet Foxy's in amongst the boat cleaning up, and these are sort of like drifting past. Beautiful. Yeah, that was probably it.
Beautiful but dangerous. Yeah. Right, lads, we're gonna have to wrap it up here, unfortunately, because I could chat like this for ages. It's been a really good laugh, but I'd like to say I'll let Aldo sign off as well. But lads, good luck. Don't overthink it. Just deal with every second as it throws itself at you and enjoy it, because it is an awesome thing that you're about to do. You're going to love it. You're going to be in the middle of the ocean away from all the shit that's going on elsewhere. And yeah, massively good luck. Also, before we sign off, just tell everyone where they can follow you, what your tags are on Insta, whatever the platforms are, let us know, so then they can follow you and also hopefully support the charities that you're representing.
Yeah, so there are a couple of ways you can follow us. The first is via our Instagram account at LAT35 Atlantic Challenge 2020. We'll be updating our Instagram account. And then there's an app called YB Races. You can enter in Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge 2020 about 3 days prior to the race. Our team name is Latitude 35, and so you can track us there. And then Jimmy can mention the other way.
Yeah, and then on the PlorisX.com website, we're going to have a daily update and media uploaded onto that. So you'll be able to get a bit of a Q&A session from us, and you know, just general feel how we're doing each day. Where we're at.
Mate, lads, really, really good effort, and I hope to see you soon at the end of this for beers and whatnot. Aldo?
Yeah, just guys, mega good luck. It's just a bit of graft, and it'll be over before you know it. And remember, just no one told us this, but if you are actually rowing away from anything, like a car crash of a thing that's happening, it will catch up with you when you get to the other side.
Yeah, any demons or skeletons in them closets, they don't go nowhere. Follow you across the ocean somehow.
Thanks for the advice.
Take it, you guys.
Sweet.
Thank you, guys.
Thank
good
you.
Luck.
Thanks, guys. Cheers, guys.
Thanks very much to Dixon and Jimmy, and best of luck to Latitude 35.
and all the teams in the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge. Massive thanks to Aldo as well. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast if you don't already, and follow me and the Book of Man for the latest news. Thanks again to Talisker for supporting this podcast, and thanks to you all for listening. Take it easy, and I'll see you again soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.